All through those late 20s and those long and lingering 30s, the long armistice, as it's been called, the BBC fulfilled its three roles: education, information, entertainment.
Hey, Lardy dear, Violet, lovely too, Violet.
In time tonight.
Stop!
It brought us Gracie Fields.
Sally, ride over Ellie. You're more than the whole world.
Our first world-famous crooner.
Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day. Someone waits for me.
Bing Crosby, and when Henry Hall replaced Jack Payne in 1932, we waited anxiously for the outcome. But in Europe, there were voices preaching other creeds. Revolution, hatred, violence, war.
Ich für eine Kirche wertvoller als der Kampf konfessioneller politischer Verbände, die in ihrer koalitionsbedingten Kompromisspolitik personelle Vorteile für Parteianhänger stets erkaufen müssen mit der ideellen Preisnahme einer wirklich innerlich religiösen Erziehung.
Hitler. And Mussolini following the same pattern.
Ha trovato in Italia una comprensione solidale che non è di ieri e che ha avuto espressioni chiare in molte manifestazioni della nostra politica estera. L'Ungheria chiede giustizia e il mantenimento di promesse che le furono solennemente fatte all'epoca dei trattati. L'Italia ha appoggiato ed appoggia tale postulato.
From Germany, Goebbels' radio was not concerned with entertainment or with information, but with propaganda. It was a new weapon.
Im Begriff war, während der andere auf dem Höhepunkt einer fantastischen und schier märchenhaft anmutenden politischen Erfolgsbahn nun im Begriff stand, die ganze Macht und die ganze Verantwortung in seine zwar jungen, aber starken Hände hineinzunehmen.
But on the BBC, every night, there was a different dance orchestra. Ambrose. Roy Fox.
Thank you.
Charlie Coons entertained us. Most of the smoke in the eyes was directed at the Abyssinians by Mussolini's troops as they invaded.
About 10 o'clock this morning, an Italian note was received in Geneva saying that, in view of Abyssinia's mobilization, the Italian government had been compelled to take all measures in East Africa for self-defense, and these measures might involve the occupation of certain strategic points. Only a few minutes later, an Abyssinian telegram arrived in Geneva saying that Italian planes were at that moment bombing Adowa and Adigrat, about 50 miles east of Adowa, and that a battle was in progress in the province of Agame, adjoining Eritrea. The telegram said there were already heavy casualties.
This is the national program. Ladies and gentlemen, Music Hall.
In May of 1935, we celebrated the Silver Jubilee of George V, and the crowds gathered outside Buckingham Palace. Less than a year after that Silver Jubilee, Stuart Hibbard was making a special announcement of sad significance.
This is London. Following bulletin was issued at 9:25. The King's life is moving peacefully towards its close. Signed, Frederick Willans, Stanley Hewitt, Dawson of Penn. All stations of the British Broadcasting Corporation will now close down until 10 p.m. when a further announcement will be made.
Sir John Reith, as Director General, came to the microphone at 15 minutes past midnight on the same occasion.
This is London. It is with great sorrow that we make the following announcement. His Majesty the King passed peacefully away at a few minutes before 12. He whom we loved as King has passed from our midst. We voice the grief of all the peoples of his empire.
The great bell of St. Paul's tolled its requiem, and the first royal funeral ever to be heard by a nation was solemnly observed.
Here outside Westminster Hall, the scene is one now of mournful solitude. The royal carriages pass slowly out through the gates, and there is left only the single line of troops, now standing, arms shouldered, alone. The royal gun carriage has by now moved out of the gates to the foot of Whitehall and is wending its way slowly now up through the silent crowds towards the cenotaph, where year by year many have witnessed the King perform his duty as the nation's chief mourner. on Armistice Day.
A new king came to the throne. Edward VIII sent this message to the Empire.
It has been an ancient tradition of the British monarchy that the new sovereign should send a written message to his peoples. Science has made it possible for me to make that written message more personal and to speak to you all over the radio. This, however, is no innovation, for my father has, for the last few years, spoken to his peoples at Christmas time. Little more than 2 months ago, he broadcast his last Christmas message, and to many of you, the sound of his voice must still seem to be ringing in your ears.
The Civil War began in Spain. In our homes, we listened to Joe Loss. Germany reoccupied the Rhineland.
Events of major importance happened in Europe today. This morning, German troops made a formal entry into the demilitarized zone on the left bank of the Rhine. Herr Hitler addressed the Reichstag at noon.
Erstens, die deutsche Reichsregierung erklärt sich bereit, mit Frankreich und Belgien über die Bildung einer beiderseitigen entmilitarisierten Zone sofort in Verhandlungen einzutreten.
Und he confirmed the denunciation of the Locarno treaties and the reoccupation of the Rhineland. He vigorously attacked Bolshevism and the Franco-Russian Pact. Finally, he dwelt on Germany's determination not to break the peace of Europe and offered to sign with France and Belgium a pact of non-aggression to last 25 years.
And 5 months later, Hitler blandly declared the Berlin Olympic Games open.
Ich verkünde die Spiele von Berlin zur Feier der 11. Olympiade neuer Zeitrechnung als eröffnet.
That was Herr Hitler announcing it open. Now they're all cheering him, and the whole crowd have raised their right arms. Now this is the hymn, the Olympic hymn, and there is Richard Strauss is conducting it. Here comes the runner. He's got his torch. He's a fair young man in white shorts, running in. He's beautifully made. A very fine sight as an athlete. He's running by all the officials. People are waving their hats at him. He's holding it high in his right hand. It seems to be I don't quite know what the torch is made of, but he's holding it high, taking long raking strides. Now he's gone down the track. He's come away over to the left. He's running up to this brazier. He'll light the Olympic fire, which will keep going for the whole of the, as long as the games are on. He's running up the steps now with his torch. There he goes. Fine-looking young man. He's got to the top of the steps now. And at the top of these steps is a large thing on three legs. A huge great brazier, much taller than the man. Is it? flame. Oh, wonderful sight, wonderful.
What with Hitler and the approaching shock of Edward VIII's abdication, the opening of the BBC's television service at Alexandra Palace was no more than a passing news item.
This is the BBC television station at Alexandra Palace. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, the television service was opened by the Postmaster General using the Baird system. The opening program will now be repeated on the Marconi EMI system. The speeches are followed by the latest edition of the British Movie Tone News, then Adele Dixon and Buck and Bubbles, both accompanied by the television orchestra.
A king departed.
This is Windsor Castle. His Royal Highness, Prince Edward.
At long last, I am able to say a few words of my own. I have never wanted to withhold anything. But until now, it has not been constitutionally possible for me to speak. A few hours ago, I discharged my last duty as King and Emperor. And now that I have been succeeded by my brother, the Duke of York, my first words must be to declare my allegiance to him. This I do with all my heart. You all know the reasons which have impelled me to renounce the throne. But I want you to understand that in making up my mind, I did not forget the country or the empire, which, as Prince of Wales and lately as King, I have for 25 years tried to serve. But you must believe me when I tell you that I have found it impossible to carry the heavy burden of responsibility and to discharge my duties as king as I would wish to do, without the help and support of the woman I love. And I want you to know that the decision I have made has been mine and mine alone. And now we all have a new king. I wish him and you, his people, happiness and prosperity with all my heart. God bless you all. God save the king.
And 6 months later, a king and queen were crowned.
King moves from his chair towards the center of the theater for the recognition. And standing alone, he shows himself to the people. The Archbishop turns to the east part of the theatre. With him go the Lord Chamberlain, the Lord Chancellor, the Lord High Constable, and the Earl Marshal, Garter King of Arms, preceding them. The Archbishop of Canterbury presents King George to the people.
Sirs, I here present unto you King George, your undoubted king. Well, for all you who have come this day to do your homage and service, are you willing to do the same?
Amen.
And the Spithead Review, when Tommy Woodruff discovered that the fleet was lit up.
At the present moment, the whole fleet is lit up. When I say lit up, I mean lit up by fairy lamps. We've forgotten the whole Royal Review. We've forgotten the royal reveal. The whole thing is lit up by fairy lamps. It's fantastic. It isn't a fete at all. It's just... it's fairyland. The whole fete is in fairyland.
And in 1938, we listen to...
It's Monday night at 7. Can't you hear the chimes? They're telling you to take an easy chair. To settle by the fireside. Look at your radio times. Monday night at 7's on the air. Now here's a little lady. She'll imitate for you some personalities you've all adored. So let's ring up the curtain on Monday night at 7 and start the evening well with Beryl Orr.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bandwagon brazenly presents Chestnut Corner. All the things we come out with. My wife's a decided blonde.
I know, I was with her when she decided. Excuse me, sir, but can you spare me a shilling for a cup of coffee?
Shilling? That's a lot for a cup of coffee, isn't it?
Listen, are you trying to tell me how to run my business?
What could be nicer than a nightingale in a tree?
A lark in a field.
How did you lose your hair?
Worry?
What did you worry about?
Losing my hair.
How are you getting on in your new house?
Oh, fine. I furnished one room by collecting coupons out of soap packets.
That's a grand idea. Why not furnish all the other rooms in the same way?
I can't.
Why not?
They're full of soap. My uncle plays the accordion every night and cries like a baby.
Why? Does he play sad music?
No, the accordion keeps pinching his stomach.
You do look pale. Are you a poor sailor?
No, I'm a rich stockbroker. No? I've come to change my name.
That'll be an expensive business. What is your name?
Harry Smells.
Ooh, I'm not surprised. What do you want to change it to?
Charlie Smells.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes Chestnut Corner for this evening. Later on, we hope to bring you some even better old jokes. Meanwhile, carry on, Bandwagon.
Every month, the news became gloomier. Germany entered Austria.
Führer hat den Balkon verlassen und betritt nun das Zimmer des Bürgermeisters. Ungeheurer Jubel brandet herauf. Ungeheuer ist die Begeisterung der Menge, die uns umgibt. Es ist ein historischer Tag in der Geschichte Österreichs. Wir gehören zu Deutschland. Wir sind ein Reich. Wir haben einen Führer. Heil unseren Führer.
But Geraldo could fill the air with a light-hearted tune.
He always sings without a shirt, ragged music to the cattle as he swings
like a gate,
back and forward in the saddle on a horse.
On a horse.
That he sings the crazy gator, then there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater. How they run,
how they run
when they hear the fellow's gun, because the western folks all know,
yes they know,
he's a highfalutin, scootin', shootin' son of a gun from Arizona. Ragtime cowboy.
And Neville Chamberlain could return from Munich, certain of peace.
Everybody saying shush, trying to quieten the crowd so that Mr. Chamberlain can make a speech. And I'm afraid you won't be able to catch his speech very well, but if he does speak and I can catch what he says, I'll try and convey something to you of what he said. Mr. Chamberlain said that he believes it is peace for our time as he looks round on the crowd of us standing here below.
In our bones, we knew that an era was almost over. The voices of the BBC newsreaders and commentators held more urgency. Lionel Marson.
This is the national programme from London. The first news, copyright reserved. These are today's main events. Germany has invaded Poland and has bombed many towns. General mobilisation has been ordered in Britain and France. Parliament was summoned for 6 o'clock this evening. Orders completing the mobilisation of the Navy, Army and Air Force were signed by the King at a meeting this afternoon of the Privy Council.
S.J. de Lubinière.
We're on number 12 platform at Waterloo Station, one of the 10 big metropolitan stations that are engaged today on the evacuation of London school children. We're on number 12 platform, the train's in, and the children are just arriving, coming along in their school groups with a banner in front saying what school they are. This lot, St. John's School, Walworth, which is south of the river, and then they follow behind. The tiny tots in front, leading up to the bigger ones, the 12, 13-year-olds behind, and here comes a high school, more like 14, 15, and 16. They're being evacuated too.
And upon the 3rd September, Prime Minister Chamberlain made his historic and depressing announcement.
I am speaking to you from the Cabinet Room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.